So I want to thank everybody for the conference organizers for inviting me and allowing me to learn from you guys. And I wonder if any of you were like me my first night here. Did you spend the night in the elevator trying to figure out how to get to your room? That's been the biggest challenge, more than genetics. So my assignment was, how do you get CGD? So we're going to start off with just some very, very basic genetic concepts. And then we'll move on into some things about DNA and then the inheritance. I expect most of you in here, all of you in here, are very familiar with this, but it's just to get us on the same page. So just as this is a blueprint, and it gives and it contains all the information that a builder would need to build a structure. So in here would be the electrical things, the heating and air, everything that would be needed to build that structure. So the human has the same blueprint, has a blueprint. And that's the chromosomes, and that's the master plan for human development and function. So embedded in these chromosomes is the master plan for how we all look, how we all feel, how we all function. This is what the chromosome pattern looks like for males. We all have 23 pair or 46 chromosomes, and everything is exactly the same between chromosome 1 and chromosome 22 between males and females. The males have the X chromosome and the Y chromosome. There's a little bit of genetic material on this Y chromosome. This is the female chromosome pattern, also karyotype, and the female has two X chromosomes. So the first rule, well, let me back up. We have pairs of chromosomes. We get half of the set from one parent, the other half from the other parent. So sort of the first rule of nature is that we all need 23 pair of these chromosomes. If there are more, or if there is less genetic material, then it can cause some problems. Here is an example of too much genetic material. And Down syndrome, as we know, is also called trisomy 21, and it has an extra copy of the 21st chromosome. And that's why those young people and babies and adults look more like each other, possibly, than their biological relatives, because this extra chromosome of 21 is what causes the features that they have. We also know that adults with trisomy 21 have a higher incidence and are more vulnerable to Alzheimer's syndrome or Alzheimer's disease. So that is something we've learned from that population. This is an example of not enough genetic material. So these are women that are born with just one chromosome, one X chromosome, and they're missing their second. And these women are usually under 5 feet in height and have problems with female ovarian and uterine development, and so childbirth can be an issue. We also know now that the most common cause of first trimester miscarriages is the result of this chromosome pattern in the fetus. So there's something about needing either the Y chromosome or the second X chromosome for reproductive fitness. Now this is an example of, let me back up. Here, the whole chromosome is not missing. We have chromosome 5 in its completeness, and the second part of chromosome 5 is missing at the very top. And there are hundreds of genes in that little section of material that is absent. And so this kind of chromosome breakage or pattern causes a condition called cri du chat, or cry of the cat. And these children are very small, they're very underdeveloped, they have a very weak cry, and they have developmental delays. So the things that I just showed you are visible to the naked eye with the help of a microscope. So if we let cells expand and we let those chromosomes grow and put them under the microscope, we can see these long structures. So extra material and missing material is possible to just see with the help of a microscope. What we did in the first probably 40 years in genetics was this was the main test we had. If someone had a child with a birth defect or a very serious illness, this test was done, and 50% of the time, chromosomes were completely normal, and we had no way of saying to them that this would happen again or what the recurrence risk would be in the family. Now, I'd like to take it just a little deeper, and I'm going to ask you to visualize the chromosomes as a necklace. So we can see the necklace with our naked eye, but we can't see the beads on the string. And the beads on the string are the chromosomes. So what the Human Genome Project has allowed us to learn is that each chromosome carries thousands of beads or thousands of genes. And if we counted up those genes across all 46 chromosomes, this is what we had, about 21,500 genes. That's all of us. And when I did genetics back in the dark ages, we used to tell families we thought we had about 80 to 100,000 genes, and this is more specifically what we have. So just like there are rules for the chromosomes, we have to have 46 or 23 pair, there are also rules about how the gene looks. And we're going to break open one and just look at it. And I consider a gene a little like a recipe. It is a sentence of instruction that the DNA machinery reads to build a protein or to build some part of the body. And the rules that we have, first of all, you can see that this sentence of instruction, the alphabet, is A, C, G, and T. These are the DNA. This is the DNA alphabet. You can also see that in this sentence of instruction, each word is three letters long. So that's another rule. Each gene, all 21,000, has a start message, which is ATG on every gene. That's like preheat the oven for a recipe. And every gene has a stop message, and it's either TGA, TAA, or TAG. So those are the rules. Every gene has a start message that tells the DNA machinery, all right, we're going to start reading this next sentence and to figure out what to add next. Every letter must be three letters long, and every gene has a stop message, take out and cool, if we're going to use recipe analogy. Now, here is what those three-letter words do. Every time the DNA machinery is reading through that sentence and it sees one of these letters, it drops in this ingredient or this amino acid, arginine.
I'm too spastic to use that one, Dr. Holland. Thank you.
So here are the seven, the next one, arginine. You can see the seven words there, and the DNA machinery drops in one of these. And then there's the start, ATG, and then these are the three stop messages. So let's just see how that looks. So there's our DNA sentence of instruction. And here's our start message. And then TAC is the code to drop in that ingredient or that amino acid or that building block. And it just keeps right on going, reading those each word and dropping in the right amino acid. So there's 20 amino acids that are indicated by these words, these 64 words. So now there's one other thing. You see the capital letters and you see the little letters. And we call the capital letters that fit in these boxcars exons, and the little letters that fit in between are the introns. Those are the connectors. And as you saw in the previous slide, all of these letters in caps indicate to the DNA machinery which ingredient to drop in next. And then it gets to little letter GTG. That means stop, take a break. We're not going to add anything for a while. It's the DNA machinery still reads through all of the letters till it gets to AAG. That means break time's over. Now we add these things, GCA, and so at the end of every boxcar or every exon is GTG, and before the starting exon is AAG. Those are just some of the basic genetic trivia rules about the DNA. Now, this is me trying to be cute and asking you in three-letter words, are you understanding this? Does this make sense? Am I making it clear? Okay. So, now, we said a few minutes ago that 21,500 genes is about what we have. But they're not all the same size. They don't all have the same numbers of letters in them. So, one of the conditions that we worked on in NIH for several years is a condition called ALPS. And the gene that causes that condition is called FAS. And that's a relatively small gene. It has 1,836 A, C, T's, and G's. Another condition that we've worked on for many years at NIH is hyper-IgE syndrome, or Job syndrome. And that gene that causes that condition is called STAT3. And it's a little bigger. It has 75,000 letters in it. And here's the breast cancer gene with 100,000 letters. But look at this one. The Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene is over 2 million letters long, and it fits into 79 of those boxcars. So just with this little bit of information, what would you guess is the total number of ACTs and Gs for all 21,000 genes? 3 billion. So let's just put that into context. If we had a truckload or several truckloads of ACTs and Gs and our assignment was to make three-letter words and start filling up encyclopedias, we could start at the bottom, on the ground, and keep going till we had enough encyclopedias to reach the top of the Washington Monument. And that's how much DNA is in one cell. So that one cell comes packaged with how many chromosomes? 46 or 23 pair that carry 21,000 genes that are spelled with 3 billion letters. That's a pretty tightly packed cell. All right, so now let's look at what can go wrong within the DNA that causes disease and causes unwanted things. So our first rule was every word had to have three letters, right? So if something happens and a letter is left out or deleted, what does the DNA machinery do to fix that? It borrows one from its neighbor. So here's how the sentence is supposed to read. Preheat the oven, then add tyrosine. But now that's been changed to serine. What's supposed to be there was lysine, has now been changed to arginine. Alanine has now been changed to leucine. So let's just go back to the kitchen a minute and use a cooking analogy. And this was a very simple instruction for chocolate chip cookies. Preheat the oven, add some flour, and get some sugar, and get the chocolate chips. And now it's preheat the oven and add peanut butter and pickles and something else. So that doesn't make a very good chocolate chip cookie recipe. So this spelling mistake is called a frame shift. Now I'm calling these spelling mistakes. When you're in talks and you're reading literature or you're hearing news about genetic discoveries, the word you'll hear is mutation. Just flip that, and that means there's a spelling mistake that's been found in a particular gene. So this is a frame shift. What does this TGA mean? Stop. Look at this word here, TGC. If an A is substituted there, look what happens. So the rest of this recipe does not get added. So if this is the protein for making a heart or contributing to an eye or something, we've missed about 15 ingredients, and that can't be good in the recipe, and it's not very good when it happens in the DNA machinery. And this is called a premature stop. And then the last one that I'll just show you is this particular word, GAA, is the code word for glutamic acid. We can keep the three-letter rule. We can substitute another one, but it puts in a different ingredient. And again, using the recipe analogy, if our recipe calls for S-A-L-T, and there's a typo in the recipe or in the cookbook, and it puts in S-A-N-D, we can do that, but it may not be something your relatives will ask seconds for. So those are the common. There's way more complicated, way many other kind of mutations that occur, but these are the common ones that happen, and it can cause, anywhere it happens, it can cause disease like cancer or cystic fibrosis or PKU or any of the primary immune deficiency diseases and genes that we find. So this one's called a missense. Now, he saw a really good slide in the opening talk this morning when Dr. Notarangelo showed the graph of the increasing number of genes that have been identified that cause primary immune deficiency. And so we're going to talk about the ones that cause CGD now. So there's one called the NCF1, neutrophil cytosolic factor. That's on chromosome 7. And there's two genes there because it takes two hits to cause CGD. You all know this better than I. The second one is on chromosome 1, and that's NCF2. The third one, NCF4, is located on chromosome 23. And the fourth one is CYBA, the cytochrome B alpha unit, is also on chromosome 10. And then I put this one in a different color because it's located on chromosome X. And so all the red color take two hits, one from each parent, to cause CGD to occur. The blue one just is just learned from one parent, and that's the mom, and it's carried on the X chromosome. So just let's look at the inheritance pattern of that. Well, first of all, what does the disease cause? What does the mutation in these genes do in the body? And as you know, it impairs phagocytosis. So this just shows the phagocyte ingesting the bacteria, and or it absorbs it and it doesn't ingest it, it fails to ingest it. For younger children, they may think of it this way, that, you know, some like pizza and some others just like bacteria. And then there's the Pac-Man theory, where the phagocytes just try to inhale the ingestions that way, the material that way. So now let's look at the inheritance pattern. So we've started with a recessive CF gene, and I just picked the one on chromosome 7. So mom has one copy on one chromosome 7 of a misspelled gene. The same gene on the other chromosome is spelled correctly. So the red indication in the red circle indicates the misspelled gene on each parent on one chromosome. So I said at the beginning that each parent gives half of their material. Their genetic material passes half of their genetic material to their child. So let's see what happens now. So mom, in this case, passes on her NCF gene. In this case, the F father passes on his healthy chromosome 7. The next possibility is a mom gives her healthy chromosome 7. Dad can give his healthy chromosome 7. Now we have to deal with Dad. Mom gives her healthy. Dad gives his copy of the gene. And the fourth option is where each parent contributes the CGD gene, which then causes the disorder. So what we're left with, if we combine all of these, is that there's a 50% chance with this couple that a child will be a carrier. And that's indicated here and here. There's a 25% chance that the child will not be a carrier. And that's indicated here. And then there's a 25% chance that the child will have CGD. And this chance occurs with each pregnancy. So you could have this happen 100 times. You could have this happen every time. You could have this happen. It's just with each pregnancy, these are the four possible recurrence risks that could occur. Now let's look at the parent with CGD and what happens when that parent starts having children or considering a family. So you can see right off the bat that this parent only has a CGD to contribute. So every child will be a carrier. But unless the other parent is a CGD carrier also, then you don't have to worry about the risk of CGD as much, but that every child from that union will be a carrier. Now let's look at the CYBB X-linked carrier. Again, mom's going to contribute, in this case, her X that's unaffected with the normal spelling of the gene. Dad's going to give his X. Is that going to be a male or a female? 2X chromosomes.
Female.
Right. Non-carrier female. All right. Mom gives, again, her normally spelled CGD. Dad gives his Y. So this is a male. Is it sick?
No.
Correct. It's a healthy male. Now we've got to deal with that pesky gene. So now mom contributes the CGD gene. Dad contributes the healthy X. This is a carrier female. Is she sick?
No.
By and large, no. And then we have the case where one out of four of affected males. So this mom has a 50% risk of passing it to any child, whether it's a girl or a boy, but she also has the same exact risk of not passing it on. So that's where I usually like to leave that message, that you have just as equal chance of not passing it on as you do. And then let's look at the adult male with CGD. You already know this, that the mother's going to give one X, the other X is going to come from dad, and that means all of the daughters that that man has will be a carrier, and all of his sons will be healthy. And that's it. So what questions can I answer for you? Great. I enjoyed talking with you.